Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Cost of producing cotton has increased, and that's something that the producers, the farmers are having to deal with. And really, as we go forward in this presentation, it's going to be an area of focus for Cotton Incorporated to find ways to help make producers more profitable through both, practices in the field, but also trying to bolster consumer demand and pull it all the way through.
That's William Kimbrell, COO, Cotton Incorporated.
And this last chart here, again, showing kind of the production costs and how those have continued to rise, and how, production costs obviously have an impact on the producer's revenue. So as we see those production costs rise, revenues go down, and obviously that's putting more and more pressure on our producers at the farm level. So an area that really we also have to have a focus on.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, at the end of the day, this is all about choices that we make.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Farmers have choices that they need to make about what they do on their farm and with their farm, what they grow and how they grow it, when they sell it, and for what purpose they sell it. They need a partner in government helping to make the right set of choices to make it easier for them to make their choices. That's one of the reasons why I have been and will continue to be, and while the President and Vice President continue to be, strong supporters of this industry, because we're willing to make the choices necessary to grow this industry, because we understand the importance of it. We understand the importance of the ethanol industry stabilizing corn prices. And certainly today, corn prices are not where we'd like them to be, but they have been better because of this industry. They have allowed farm families to continue to potentially profit not only from production, but also being part of ownership opportunities in these ethanol facilities. They have allowed the small communities that farmers support to continue to have that support. And I just told your leadership group, the concern that I have about rural communities is if we don't keep people on the farm, the old saying is if farmers do well, everybody else does well, then we have and will continue to see a shrinking of the rural population, and it's that population that serves, that provides a disproportionate number of those of us those who serve in the military. A disproportionate number of people who go into the military come from small towns. So if small towns continue to shrink in population and as a percentage, our national security is threatened. So the importance of this industry, whether it's jobs, whether it's the environmental benefits, whether it's the healthcare benefits, whether it's helping farms continue to thrive, the support they give to rural communities, all of that is just incredibly important. So it's important for us to make right choices, to make sure this industry continues to do the good that it does. So, for example, when I came back to this job, one of the first things I did was to reach out to the EPA Administrator, Michael Regan, to explain to him the damage that had been done with the granting of waivers that had taken place preceding me coming back to this job. Those waivers, as you know, restricted the capacity of the RFS to do what the RFS was designed to do, which was to support this industry. And I'm pleased with the notion that he understood that, and that's why the EPA, you haven't seen the granting of those waivers. That's a choice, the choice that the EPA is making, and it's the right choice. We also had a conversation about E15, the importance of getting more E15 into the mix. And that's a function of two things. It's a function, first of all, of allowing E15 to be sold. And that's why it was important for us to make the case, as we did, and for EPA to make the choice that it did, to grant the E15 waivers during the summer, because the science led us to a different conclusion that now opens up that opportunity. And that extended to the EPA's decision in 8 states to grant a waiver for year-long and year-round E15, which is why last year in 2023 we had a record amount of E15 sold in this country, and why we expect and anticipate in 2024 that record will be broken.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I tell you what, to bring New Yorkers, people from Arizona, other places in the United States to the Iowa State Fair to see what agriculture really is, to see the livestock, to see the equipment, for them to fly in and see corn and soybeans for the, all as far as the eye can see. I had so many comments like, wow, this is Iowa. Of course, my comment was, yeah, this is heaven.
Randy Feenster represents the 4th District of Iowa. He's a member of the House Ag Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee.
But it was just great for them to see. But the Ways and Means Committee hearing was on tax, and we had a lot of time on agricultural tax. When we talk about stepped up in basis, that is going to go away under the new administration, or I should say the Biden-Harris administration noted in their Green Book that that would probably go away. So there's a concern there. 179 depreciation, where you can absolutely depreciate that one-time asset. And then a lot of pass-throughs, the cooperative pass-throughs, that 20% qualified business income pass-through that affects many of our farmers, that was also discussed. So there's really some significant things that go away in 2025, and that's what we're working on, and that's what we're talking to farmers about, of how that would affect them.
He's also been in the middle of a bird flu situation.
Yeah, I tell you what, Tony, this is at the epicenter of my district. I mean, you talk about 100 million birds that have been depopulated over the last year and a half. Half of those, I should say 25% of those are in my district, 25 million of them. And so we got to combat it. We've got to figure out a strategic solution. So I wrote a letter, which many of us members signed on to the Department of Agriculture, Secretary Vilsack, saying we've got to come to a solution. What can we do? Not only for a vaccine, but how is there a better way to depopulate? How can we create a better way to make sure that our farmers are compensated for the loss? Because this loss is not only just, you know, depopulating, it's the loss of the profits for probably 3 to 6 months before you get new birds and before they grow. So I just think we've been ad hoc at this for the last, since 2014. It's time to get the brilliant minds together in a room and say, hey, this is how we're going to come to a solution to try to solve this problem.
But when it comes to finding a solution, there are solutions for the nation's debt. Will we solve it?
You nailed it. You have to think about this. You know, we have $35 trillion in debt. Right now, every year, 42% of our revenue coming into the Department of Revenue, 42% goes to interest. And that's only going to grow because obviously that rate on our bonds are going up. So we have to do something about it. This isn't wait till tomorrow. We got to find solutions today. And a lot of that can be done. We have to grow our economy. To me, it starts with having successful farm communities. How do we do that? Having a stronger export market. Right now, our main streets are really getting hurt with those commodity prices. When they're that low, that means that farmer's not buying that next piece of equipment, that next tractor or whatever. Our farmland is obviously decreasing. But when you grow that economy, more revenue goes into the Department of Revenue, and that's what we got to do. And we got to look at our spending. Obviously, we have spent on a lot of things, but we have to get things in under control, especially unfunded liabilities. And that starts also by looking at things like Medicare, Social Security, not to touch what's currently there, but the future person, that 21-year-old that's getting on Social Security, that's paying into Social Security. How can we make sure that we can secure it for long term? Because in 8 years, think about this, in 8 years, it's going to take everybody's going to take a 22% hit on their Social Security check if we don't start resolving this now.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Well, I'm kind of excited. I'm glad you mentioned the name Combest.
Tom Sell is with Combest Sell and Associates. Combest coming from former representative and chairman of the House Ag Committee, Larry Combest.
Larry Combest, of course, served honorably for, was elected to 10 terms, was chair of the Ag Committee. Kind of the peak, the culmination of his work was, one, a crop insurance rewrite in 2000 in the 02 Farm Bill, which really kind of restored the safety net under the Freedom to Farm concept. And really, we've been living off that Farm Bill since that time. Even one great thing about that Farm Bill is it allowed for dynamic change within the U.S. agricultural industry. But certainly, I think when you look at this Farm Bill, perhaps to the greatest extent since that O2 Farm Bill was done. There's just a call from the countryside and a need to kind of update some of the measures of when support is needed from the federal government. Obviously, we've spent more than $75 billion in ad hoc, kind of in addition to the Farm Bill's type of spending since the 18 Farm Bill was passed. So that's kind of a proof and a verdict that the 18 Farm Bill didn't meet all the needs of the rural economy and support it the way that members of Congress wanted to. And so really the goal of this Farm Bill is to kind of take that ad hoc spending and build it into better, more reliable, more fair programs that are going to support the infrastructure and support the industry going forward as this hungry world continues to grow. So to meet the needs of the future.
In many instances, most members of Congress have no working knowledge of production ag. That's where Sell comes in.
I'd say that's been kind of my work for the last, 25 years, trying to build an appreciation for all that agriculture does for our individual lives, but also for our economy, for the culture of our great nation, kind of this entrepreneurial spirit that farmers bring to the table every day. So I think there is a bedrock appreciation, and you get to issues like trade or energy, where ag has always been a big part of our national trade, our international trade profile. Increasingly, it's becoming more of a part of the conversation in the energy sector as well. It's always been that to an extent. Food is the most basic form of energy, providing that kind of caloric content that we all need to be creative and think of great things. So it is a very natural part of all the conversation. There's always been some level of misunderstanding about the role that federal policies play in it, and that's been our job, is to just try and help the members of Congress, the representatives in government, just understand all that goes into getting from a seed to a marketable product internationally, and some of it builds back into the economies of local towns like Florida, Texas, or wherever you are. And that this story of ag is remarkable. It is truly one of the great heroes of our economy and our culture. All that it does to just build communities throughout the heartland of the U.S. that have truly made this nation great. So, yeah, you just asked me kind of a bread and butter question, but I do think, to answer your question plainly, I think there is a greater appreciation for all that agriculture does today than there was 20, 25 years ago. I think we have a great, strong basis of support to get this Farm Bill done. The last Farm Bill passed at the end in the conference report with more than 84% affirmative votes in both the House and the Senate. And I think if done right, following the lead and working with G.T. Thompson and Debbie Stabenow, we can exceed those margins this year.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
While this is a 15 billion gallon industry, important, significant, we now recognize that we're not going to have battery powered planes and ships. We're not going to have hydrogen powered planes and ships for quite some time. And so the world needs this industry to help it create a low carbon intensity marine and jet fuel.
Speaking to the American Coalition of Ethanol, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Sustainable aviation fuel. The first step in that process was to ensure that the first choices made in this area by the Treasury Department with reference to 40B would for the first time recognize agriculture's capacity to be part of the solution. Now, I know that not everybody was happy with the bundling of all of the cover crops and nutrient management and things of that nature that were in the 40B guidance, but it was an effort simply to introduce the world to the fact that agriculture can make a difference, that ethanol can make a difference, that ethanol and crop production are now in a way where we can prove and establish that, in fact, it can be part of the solution. That was a really important thing to do, and it was also important to correct the mistaken science about indirect land use that had been guiding some decision-making in the past. Now we get to 45Z. Now, the reality is nobody's going to use 40B because the next year or two, not much ethanol and not much sustainable aviation fuel is going to be actually produced in this country. Maybe 10 million gallons down in Georgia. But the reality is the real game here is 45Z. We recognize that. So the first order of business was to reach out to all of you and to the country and say, okay, if we're going to do this for 45Z, how should we do it? So we made a request for information, We received 260 comments. Most of them were in favor. Most of them encouraged participation by agriculture. Most of them suggested that there are indeed ways to quantify carbon reduction from various things occurring on the farm or in ethanol facilities, or in relationship to carbon capture and storage. We saw a broad array of support from farmers, from the ethanol industry and others. And we even saw environmental groups and conservation groups recognize the significant environmental opportunity that ethanol can present. So we're taking that information. We're working with our scientists and our chief economists, and we are formulating a rule that will essentially define a bit more, with a bit more specificity, what we can do and are doing that will make a difference. And the idea behind this rule would be integrating it into the GREET model so that the calculation can be made, so that the farm contribution and the ethanol contribution can help lower that score and get it below the magic 50 level that would allow fuel made from ethanol to be competitive and to qualify for these tax credits. Our goal is to make sure that we make the case to the federal interagency process that's going to formulate all of this. We make the case that there are a number of crops, corn, soybeans, obviously two of them, but not necessarily the only two, that can be beneficial, and that there are specific individual actions that are being taken on farms and groups of actions that can make a difference and ought to be included. In other words, not simply requiring a bundling of actions, but giving farmers flexibility and choice to choose from a menu of activities and actions.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It is a big factor. Very little of it works from an economic standpoint without subsidies at this point. And so the doling out of the subsidies really drives it at this point.
Talking sustainable aviation fuel and sustainable marine fuel, StoneX's Arlen Suderman.
We're also seeing some of that at both the state and federal level, and California tends to be the leader. We've seen California recently make decisions. They're actually late in a comment period for a proposal that they're trying to push through that would cap oilseed use as a feedstock in the green diesels at 20%, because they're trying to push toward electric vehicles rather than vehicles that use fossil fuels and the liquid biofuels, either one. From an ethanol standpoint, not too many people are comfortable riding an airplane that's all electric at this point. So sustainable aviation fuel demand does appear to still be strong, driven by Europe. And these airlines have billions of dollars at stake in order to be able to continue to fly into Europe. So that means having a portion of their fuel be sustainable aviation fuel. Secretary Vilsack could very easily facilitate that for the ethanol industry. Ethanol makes a nice feedstock for sustainable aviation fuel, but so far the administration's policies have pretty much closed the door to ethanol being a feedstock. Now, the ethanol industry is working to put together a carbon sequestration pipeline that would capture carbon from ethanol production, transport it to the shale sand areas where it would be deposited in the ground. That would give it, according to the government guidelines that they set up already, a carbon intensity score that would qualify it for a high enough subsidy to make it work as a feedstock. And if that happens over the next couple of years, and it'll probably take a couple of years if that happens, that could dramatically increase the demand for ethanol and therefore the demand for corn.
So this is in the future. What else could be down the road? Kurt Blades is with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not a prognosticator of what's going to happen in the future. But, you know, for those of your listeners that are viewing this on video, if you look over my shoulder, you'll see a couple of model tractors that were actually my father's toys when he was growing up. One of them is a corn picker that is over the top of a tractor, and the other is an early pull type combine. My dad tells me the story that pool top combine that he has the toy of was the first machine he bought. He and his dad bought together when they were farming. It had a 36-inch header. So you think about that, 36 inches. That's roughly a yard. And you think about a header today that is 60 foot long. That efficiency gain in one generation is pretty amazing. So if you think about the form of that tractor, the form of that harvester, that form of that technology, how it has remained roughly the same, even though they look very different, it's still a single power source that drives the machine through. Now, if you look at what that could look like moving forward when you apply technology or different power sources or other bits of technology, boy, it becomes really exciting. And what that means for a farmer's operational efficiency and the data that comes with that machine, it's pretty exciting. And that all of a sudden you have generations of knowledge that's been transferred down from, you know, farming that same field and institutional knowledge, now having the data to back that up to make intelligent decisions on an individual acre or an individual plant. Boy, it's going to be exciting what we can get out of the land.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You know, you take a look at the Ways and Means Committee, and I'm on the Trade Subcommittee, and trade is so important to ag.
Michelle Fishbach is from Minnesota, a member of the Ways and Means Committee.
And then we talk about taxes in Ways and Means. That's so incredibly important to all of our business farmers. And so, estate tax. When I was on the Ag Committee the first term I was here, is we talked a lot about that estate tax and the stepped up basis. And that's all in part of the Ways and Means. So I work very closely with the members of the Ag Committee. Brad Finstead, who's from Minnesota, he border his district. He's on the, and he is an ag superstar. And so we work together all the time, and I think that, for Minnesotans, and Texans do this a lot, is, you spread out so that you're on different committees and can have a hand in each of those areas to help the area, help ag, help Minnesota, help those districts. So it's something that we do a lot of work together on, not only, not Ways and Means, but that ag. And on budget, right now we are looking at the farm bill, and there's issues with some of the CBO scores because we need to make sure that we're paying for that, for everything great that we've done in the farm bill. And so working with CBO to make sure that they understand how things need to be scored so that we can pay for that bill.
It may be important for other industries, but trade is vital for ag.
I think we all know that it's critical. We need to have markets for our goods, and we need to be able to, and we can't be dependent on one place. We can't send all of our beans to China. We have to make sure that we're opening markets other places. And not too long ago was part of a delegation to Mexico and to Ecuador and to some of the South American countries so that we could, start that conversation, because the Biden administration's not doing it plain and simple. They are not doing what they need to be doing for ag trade. And so we are doing what we can, in the farm bill, but also trying to open up those markets and trying to get that discussion started, so that, and we had the issues with GMO corn in Mexico. So we were talking to the president of Mexico about that, but also making sure that they understand that we are interested, because the Biden administration is not pursuing the kinds of things that they need to. We've had Ambassador Tai in round tables and in front of Ways and Means on several occasions. And they, plain and simple, they are just not pursuing free trade agreements. They're just not. And she admitted it. And so we need to push best we can at our, from Congress, that we're getting those markets open, because farmers and everybody understands the importance of having those markets open.
And there's a farm bill.
The farm bill is critical. We need to make sure that we do that this year. And I will say this. I think that Chairman Thompson has done a wonderful job dealing with all the different aspects that he needs to deal with. He's been around the country, getting input from various, groups and individuals from across the country. And I think he's done a great job. And I'm very happy, with the crop insurance portion of it. I'm very happy with that he does increase money for those trade programs. And I am excited to, they have it in committee tomorrow. And so we'll see about the markup tomorrow, but I'm excited to get things started and move. And from what I hear about the Senate bill, there's some differences, but they're not as bad as you think. They're not completely opposed. And so I think that once it gets passed, once it gets to that conference committee point, I think that it will just be putting a finer point on things. But I think we need to do it. We need to do it this year. We need to get it done because like I said, there's great things about in crop insurance with beginning farmers, with veterans, and helping out farmers in general, because that's part of their risk management tool. And so we need to make sure that it's strong and they can still use it. And like I said, mention the trade. Absolutely, because it is something that we need to make sure we're doing for our farmers is opening up those trade markets.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Minor month-over-month adjustments were recorded in USDA's August look at meat production and prices for this year. But as World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski indicates,
the overall story hasn't changed much from last month and several of the previous months going back a while.
Reflected in trends such as higher slaughter rates for cattle and lower slaughter rates for hogs, growing broiler production, and strong demand to boost prices for steers and broilers year over year. Turning to U.S. meat trade,
the main change is in terms of pork exports. We're seeing a lot of competition in pork export markets, especially from Brazil, and that's starting to show up in relative weakness in U.S. pork exports, which we reduced this month by 125 million pounds.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.